Well, good morning on this really kind of different sort of morning. No snow in the forecast, and it is Wednesday, December 28th, and this is the KRFY Morning Show. And I'm Susie Perez, one of your co-hosts.
And I'm Chris Bessler, the second co-host around here. How are you doing today, Susie?
I'm doing good. I just came back through the storm from Montana yesterday.
Oh.
6 hours.
Wow.
200 miles, 6 hours.
How fast were you? What was your average speed in a snowstorm?
Probably the most I went was, like, average probably 40.
Yeah.
Yeah, just plowing. But I didn't go over the pass at St. Regis. I chose to go north to Thompson Falls.
Oh, sure.
And it was almost dry all the way to Trout Creek. So that was a good decision.
That's my preferred route when I'm going to Missoula or that direction.
Mine too.
Yeah.
So it's a good one. Anyways, everyone have a good Christmas.
We did. And we should mention today we're going to be taking a look back at 2016 in the news of the year. We have with us Jim McKiernan. He's publisher of the Bonner County Daily Bee.
Howdy.
Publisher and janitor, actually, because you have been seen shoveling your walks.
Yeah, I was shoveling my walk yesterday, and you were harassing me as you walked by. So,
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get that. And we hope to be joined as well by Cameron Rasmussen, who is the editor of the Sandpoint Reader. However, we got a call from Cameron, and he is stuck in his driveway.
Here
he comes.
I see Cameron.
Okay.
Here he comes.
He got free of his driveway.
Yep. Yeah. And there's a lot of things to talk about when you're thinking about looking back at some of the high points, the newsworthy things to look at in our life here in Bonner County and surrounding North Idaho area. And then I was hoping, and I didn't tell you guys this, but if we all had maybe one prediction for something that will be big in 2017.
Yeah, I think we want to take a little look ahead to 2017, maybe talk
towards
about the things we think are going to be news, and then Jim and Cameron will have bold predictions about exactly what's going to happen.
Okay, and welcome Cameron Rasmussen from the Sandpoint Reader.
Hello.
Editor at large. Okay.
Yeah, I had a bit of an adventure getting here, but I'm here now, so yeah.
Did you dance in your car?
It was a little bit like that. I was worried I was going to have to break out the shovel, but turns out I was able to wiggle my way out.
Yeah.
So,
rock it back and forth.
Yeah, that's the trick.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to have both of you here, but first let's talk about what the National Weather Service is telling us. Currently, it's overcast and 28 degrees Fahrenheit. Today, we can expect mostly cloudy with a high of 31. Tonight, a low of 23 with clouds. And then we go back into about a 60% chance of precipitation Thursday night, high Thursday 32, and low Thursday night 26. Kind of average winter weather looking ahead.
Yeah.
So,
but really nice, actually. When the temperatures are right there and things stay pretty much frozen, that's the sweet spot for our winter. A couple of more things going on outside. The sunrise this morning was at 7:36 a.m. It'll set at 3:58 p.m. tonight. Actually, it's more like the afternoon, isn't it? But here's the big news. Now that we're past the winter solstice, in the last 7 days, we've gained 3 minutes of daylight per day.
I'll take it.
Nice.
Believe me.
Yeah, the days are going to be getting longer. Up at Schweitzer, they've had, I think, about 13 inches in the last 72 hours. They now have 55 inches at the summit, 35 inches in the village. Great skiing. I can testify that. I went out and field tested myself on Sunday and Monday.
Did a little research.
Yeah. Can't take their word for it. You got to get up there. And I'll say the snow is very nice.
All right. I'm interested to get back out there this weekend, actually. I haven't been there since the lodge opened up.
The new Sky House.
Yeah, the Sky House.
Well, you were up there for that opening, but when it was darn cold.
It was.
I'll say this. It was a gorgeous day that day. Huge views because it was so bright and sunny. And I was up this weekend, and now it's been kind of socked in. And the sweet spot there is when you've got the big views. Mm-hmm. The Sky House is a really neat addition to the mountain.
Mm.
And the lake level is holding steady at 2051.9. That's the likely winter pool level, so it's not going to change much over the course of the winter. Susie, what else is going on around town?
Well, there's a lot of things because this is the holiday season. There's all kinds of entertainment on New Year's evening. And you can find out a whole list, actually, in the Sandpoint Reader last week, and probably also the Daily Bee.
The Thursday Bee carries those, down on those as well. And, of course, I'll rattle off some of the big ones. De Luna's is having a New Year's Eve concert with David Raitt and the Baja Boogie Band.
And whose brother is that?
It's Bonnie Raitt's brother.
Oh, woman of rock and roll.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty cool. And Schweitzer has got a few different parties for both adults and kids on the mountain. There's live music up there. And one of the biggies is the third annual Hive New Year's Eve Ball. It's featuring the Pimps of Joytown. And a portion of their proceeds go to support the Angels Over Sandpoint.
Oh, nice.
So you have a good pick. And that's, I'm sure there's more going on.
There's a really good bluegrass band at the McDuff's
on Saturday. I don't know if they're playing till midnight. Are they going?
I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll find out.
But you could do a variety of things and have much fun. So that's the big stuff going on this week.
Mm-hmm. And we'll get to the community calendar at the end of the show. We'll have a few minutes. We have something coming up in January we want to tell you about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hang on to find out about that.
Yeah.
And the tickets are going fast.
They are.
And with that, let's turn to the topic of the day, which is the year 2016. And we have with us again Cameron Rasmussen. He's editor of the Sandpoint Reader, and Jim McKiernan. He's publisher of the Bonner County Daily Bee. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're looking forward to wise insights. So I'd like to set it up as, you know, there's news going on every single day. So winnowing out what might be the most important stories of the year is kind of a task, and it's a judgment call. But I figured we might go through and just each of us rattle off what we thought were most important. I'm sure there's a lot of duplicates.
Yeah,
and I think there's a big obvious one.
There's definitely the obvious one, and it's the one that took up the majority of my time this year, certainly in the amount of hours spent working on it, and that was, of course, the election. Nationally, it was unprecedented, of course, but here, just in Sandpoint, with our local legislative races, it was also a very interesting one to cover this year, just for how fraught and hardly fought it was on both sides.
Yeah.
So.
And actually, of course, we had two elections. We have the primary election in the spring, and then in November we had the general election. And a lot of our races here get decided in the primary election. We're so heavily tilted towards Republicans that it's the Republican races that decided a couple of the important seats, including the Bonner County Commissioner races.
Yeah, what was interesting is I've never seen the intensity of write-in candidates that seem to happen in Boundary and Bonner County both. And in both cases, the sheriff's races had write-in candidates. Of course, they lost by substantial margins, which, you know, that's just a tough position to be in. But it was interesting to see both of them on the Republican ticket jump back into the race after the primary.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was going to say, you know, I've never seen a write-in candidacy that won, but there was one. And
really?
That was in the Democratic primary where Bob Vicarious ran as a Democrat, and he's a very conservative guy. And by the time the Democrats realized they hadn't put up a candidate and that he was going to be standing unopposed as a Democrat, mm-hmm. It was a House race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For the Idaho House. They put forward a write-in candidate.
Stephen.
Yeah.
Yep. Stephen Howlett. And he went on to win and go up against Sage Dixon.
Yeah. So, but he didn't win by very much.
Yeah.
He won by only a few votes. Of course, I think in that race there was a total of 70 votes or so. It was was it that small of a number?
It was close. There was, for quite some time, a question of whether he had actually won, and it was only through the benefit of the final count that we, you know, saw that he did indeed get the majority of votes. And I can't remember whether that was through absentee ballots being factored in or what it was. But the night of, it seemed like he had lost that, and so.
So some really
interesting to watch.
Yeah, some really interesting things in the primaries, and then in the general election. You know, I might be naive, but I wasn't as aware of the like you said, Heather Scott won the Sandpoint area, but how much the outlying areas really play into the final results. And so that was the surprising to me in some ways.
That race with actually Kate, I think, carried Sandpoint, and then Heather carried the surrounding areas. But what was amazing was the margins in Boundary County. And I think in Kate's case, she didn't make the connection in Boundary County. And then in, you know, Blanchard and Priest River, which are Heather's strongholds, those were huge. But, you know, one of the biggest issues I saw in the election was that a lack of political tolerance. And in 2016, I thought, you know, what's happened is the parties are so divided in their views that they have no tolerance for the other side, and opposing views, which are healthy in a democracy, are really shunned, and you're labeled as a, you know, an outsider. Even in the presidential race, what was the label that they the deplorables was the
Hillary put that word out, and it got picked up and used for supporters of Trump. Yeah,
You know, if there's anything in 2017 I'd like to see is some political tolerance, and it's more that, you know what, I had a discussion with a commissioner, which I will not name at this time, but we talked about the fact that the parties couldn't see, you know, if there's 10 issues on the table, if they didn't agree on all 10, there was no tolerance at all. They could agree on 9, but if that 10th one was in disagreement, there was no tolerance. So it was huge.
So if you're looking for more tolerance in 2017, what do you think that might take, and how to facilitate that in a different way? Because in the old days, George Eskridge, you know, was a Republican, but Democrats could really hear his message and get behind things that he stood for. It wasn't so fragmented and diverse.
Yeah, well, there's a great writer and professor out there named Jonathan Haidt, and he's written extensively on the subject. And one of the things that he pins down is the fact that more and more now people have kind of disassociated themselves with people of differing opinions. And that's true on the national level with congressmen and women who it used to be lived in Washington. They send their kids to the same schools. They, you know, eat with each other. They socialize afterward. Now they typically don't live in Washington. Typically, they're just in town to do business and get out. And so that's led to acrimony on that level. But it's also true on the micro scale as well, with, you know, people like you and me who have opinions, certainly, and tend to feel good when those opinions are validated. And
there's no question we have these silos of opinion now, and you can basically pick the media that reinforces your existing belief, where you don't have to be challenged by other ideas. And we're definitely seeing that. And we're seeing that here locally, and we saw that particularly well in this election. Mm-hmm. For instance, Heather refused to come on this radio station, which we try to maintain. We do a series of interviews, and we try to maintain a strict neutrality. Each candidate answers the same questions. They get the same amount of time on the microphone.
Right.
But she didn't come on, and I think because she felt like it would be slanted against her. And I know that both the Reader and the Bee had similar experiences. The Reader, for instance, she failed to come to the general election forum, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And I think you had an event online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were doing a Facebook Live event, which was just 8 predetermined questions given to both candidates well ahead of time, and Kate came on and Heather didn't. And I think that's indicative of the lack of willing to listen to the other views. And so it really makes, you know, when we elect officials, we want a well-rounded candidate in office. We want them to consider all angles. We want them to think of our interests first and our values, but they really need to be aware of the other values. And I think in this election, we saw specifically from the 1A race that we didn't see a well-rounded approach on both sides. And I, you know, in Kate's case too, I know she probably felt uncomfortable going to some of the events put on by Heather's folks, and Heather obviously felt very uncomfortable coming to the folk to the forums that the Reader put on and the Facebook Live events, any event. I mean, I don't know that anybody saw it in an event.
To be quite honest, I do not know, except for very polarizing issues, what Heather represents us with, because she is our representative. And without that opportunity to speak, to listen, I think listening is an important ingredient to understanding. But if you can't even hear it because no one's speaking, it's difficult to support someone. Yep. So then more polarization.
Yep.
And so
we've seen that she can, I mean, obviously she's good at something. She can pull a heck of a lot of candidates out of the woodwork and get elected. So
a lot of votes out of the woodwork.
A lot of votes out of the woodwork.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, I don't know Heather well, but she's always friendly and personable. And I think she makes connections with people on a personal level, no question. But, you know, speaking as a journalist, I'd really like to see her use the media that exists in order to communicate her views to her constituents. And that's the way constituents can communicate back to her as well.
Yeah. And, you know, this is also something that we're seeing an issue with, both on the national and local level, is certain candidates now have an unwillingness to engage with the media like has been traditional. And so what we're going to be challenged with in the years to come is this impulse that people have to essentially redefine the media and trustworthy media as whatever they want. And, you know, I can speak for myself, and I think I can speak for Jim, certainly, and of course I can speak for the good folks at the Daily Bee, that when we go at a story, our driving interest is more documenting a situation than trying to put some kind of agenda out there. And that's not true of all media, and so I think people are going to have to start questioning, you know, what is the motivation behind you know, this article that I'm reading on the internet. You know, unfortunately, there's not a whole lot of willingness to do that right now. Certainly not from my perspective.
So trusting your local print journalists and media outlets and your local community radio station could be a first step and really give us all a chance. I'm not going to give up on Heather, and I think we could have an opportunity for her to just come in sometime and talk.
Sure, yeah. And of course, we do that periodically as the legislative session gets on, which will be starting here shortly. We like to get the legislators in to tell us what's going on in Boise and what kind of issues they're working on. So that will be coming around.
Ultimately, the goal is that it's the same. If you think about the differences in candidates, ultimately, they want a great place to live and work.
Yeah. And I'll say this. I think everybody here wants our candidates from District 1 and our county candidates to do well and represent their constituents. And I'm sure that most of them really want to do that. They want to get in and speak for the people and advocate for the people. So good luck to them in 2017. I want to remind our listeners that this is 88.5 KRFY, the morning show with Chris and Susie. And this morning, we're speaking with Jim McKiernan of the Bonner County Daily Bee, Cameron Rasmussen of the Sandpoint Reader, and we're taking a look at the top stories of the year. So, of course, the election was the dominant one. Jim, what would you pick as, like, your second biggest story?
You know, I think I'm focused a little on the bid. You know, I'm on the chamber board, and I've really spent a lot of time with the downtown business owners and managers, and I've seen what a community can do with that kind of revenue, and I'm afraid that I've written an editorial about this. I'm afraid that the bid is going to fall by the wayside.
And the bid, just to clarify, it's the Business Improvement District that takes in downtown Sandpoint.
Right. And I think you know, one of the things that needs to be looked at. Are the boundaries correct? Are the programs that the bid is doing correct? All of those things can be changed and fixed and altered to benefit the businesses that are in the bid. But to just throw it out the window, I mean, if you talk to, you know, I've worked with a guy named Roger Brooks who does downtown revitalization planning. And, you know, first thing that they ask when they come into a community is what funding mechanisms do you have to improve things like landscapes and stuff like that? And all of the time, when you think about downtown revitalization, a revenue source like the bid is the basis for them making those improvements. And for us to just say, oh, we're not going to have it. But one caveat of that is that I really am disappointed in the direction or lack of direction coming from the mayor's office. And I know Shelby's a very strong small business proponent, but I just don't think that he's really put his foot forward and said, hey, we need this, or tell us what the problems are. He's been kind of silent and not necessarily totally informed. On the other hand, he's got Jennifer Stapleton, who is very engaged in that discussion. So, but a lot of people look up to Shelby, and I think him coming out and saying, just tell us what we need to do, mm-hmm. would help.
Well, yeah, I think that Jennifer's really taken this issue and run with it. It's interesting to have, I believe it's Boise State University involved in helping collect data for this, for deciding the future of the bid. And so I'm going to be really interested to see what they have to report on when this Boise State University-led survey is finished up, I think, at the end of this year. It sounds
at the end of this, at the end of 2016.
Actually, I think they're going to go to the, they extended it because of the holiday season, so I think it's going to go to the 15th or something.
Okay.
Like that. Yeah. Right. So we're going to be seeing pretty good canvassing of downtown opinion, and I think that should give some good direction to kind of decide where this whole thing goes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope so. I got a copy of the survey, since I have a business downtown. Yeah. Good survey, but here's a small complaint. If you want to go online and do it, they have a link to it that's like 50 characters long. You know, one of these things that's almost impossible to type in. I'd like to see them take that survey and go door to door with it, because just relying on people to take the time to fill it out and then mail it back in is going to bias the survey right there. Mm-hmm. They need to take the survey out and do the door-to-door thing. Otherwise, they are going to be influenced by the people that are negative about the bid or what the bid could be.
Very strong opinions are going to determine who turns it in.
And speaking of Shelby, he will be our guest on the morning show on the 18th of January. And with a little city update, maybe Jennifer will come in with him. We'll get a picture of that survey, maybe we'll have some results, and we can ask them just kind of what you just mentioned, Jim, about kind of stepping into that role a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to take a guess at Shelby because I've talked to him a little bit about it. I think Shelby is wondering if the bid's a good idea, and so that's part of the reason he's putting the survey forward right now and trying to find out what do the businesses really want.
Right.
You know, going back to when it was started, probably about 15 years ago, they did have a majority of the businesses that signed the petition to form the bid. That's what they required. And the businesses at that time were on board. Looking back over the history of it, there's like in any, basically it's a nonprofit organization. Even though they get a staff person, they want to use the money they raise, which is not a lot. It's on the vicinity of, do you guys know the budget number?
I thought it was around 70,000 a year or something.
Yeah,
like
it's about 90, actually, 90? But it should be about 140 if everybody would pay their assessments.
Yeah. Right.
A lot of people are just saying, I'm not going to pay it. And there's not a good enforcement mechanism. That's part of the problem.
Yeah.
I pay every month or 3 months when the bill comes around.
Right.
It's kind of chaps me that other people are just sliding. And yet the money is used to promote the common good of the downtown, right?
Does it pay for things like the beautiful flowers in the summer and the lights at Christmas?
Yes.
Yeah,
like
the winter carnival.
Specifically for those things.
That was where we, you know, you get the whole parade and fire dancing has been used in the past.
They do a lot of events that are designed to bring people into the downtown to try to stimulate, you know, economic activity.
Right.
And they are in charge of the mutmits and you know, some of the thing, beautification and keeping the place clean. They organize a cleanup every spring. They actually do quite a number of things.
Right.
And what the businesses are going to have to decide, well, is it worth it, or we just let that stuff go? I guess that's the
question. Is it worth $100, or is it, you know, whatever it is year?
And most of the businesses are in at a $10 a month level, truth. So it's not a very big. Some of the people that are really critical of this are only paying $10 to $35 a month, but they don't see the value, obviously.
There are a couple of valid criticisms, I think, to the bid, though, and one thing that people have complained about is lack of equitability in the benefits that they receive from the bid. And so, you know, people go out and they say, well, I'm paying in, but there's, you know, no electricity infrastructure nearby for you to do Christmas lights for me during the holidays. And there's no place to put a flower basket nearby during the summer. So, you know, and maybe I'm not the type of business that benefits from foot traffic when you do these events. So, you know, what do I get out of this? That's a valid complaint, I think. And also there's the just the issue of the amount that you pay being tied to the square footage of your building, which, you know, if you have a small business that for whatever reason requires a lot of square footage, that's a, you know, pretty hefty sum to have to pay in. So
but actually they do break that out according to the portion of your business as public facing, as they say.
Sure.
So in general, we will have some people from BID, we'll hear about the survey, and we'll hear Shelby on the 18th. But it is an issue, and it is something that it's coming up to either change and be replaced with something else, or get it going in a way that is equitable to all. So, but it has value, and to see where that goes. So that was another issue.
Okay, so let's talk about story number three for the year. It may will have impact on the coming year. You got a pick, Cameron?
I've got one that I thought was pretty interesting, just for how long-standing of an issue it's been, and how, you know, attempts to solve it recently have been, I think, fairly successful. But now we've got a whole new monkey wrench, and that's downtown parking. You know, anyone who's paid attention to downtown business politics for the past, you know, decade or so, I'm sure, probably has heard about parking. It's certainly a big complaint. Early this year, there was an attempt to solve that, driven by Mayor Ronstadt, to basically reformat the entire way that that parking is handled. So now you have, for instance, a number of city lots that are free 24-hour parking. Some areas are free 3-hour parking. Some areas are free 4-hour parking, so on and so forth.
And really, they restricted the 2-hour parking to just a small part of the downtown, which is First and Cedar, and I think a piece of Second, maybe.
Right, where business owners were complaining that, you know, we've got downtown employees that are parking on the street. They're not leaving any room for customers. And so, you know, to a large extent, I think, certainly based on my own observations, and the city, you know, claims to have measurements to back this up, this was, you know, pretty effective at addressing some of those complaints, certainly along those hot spots on First and Cedar. But now you've got, just recently, the somewhat controversial agreement between the city and Kinnexu Health Services that should Kinnexu decide to expand its business into downtown Sandpoint, which is certainly a desirable outcome for a lot of different reasons, the city will lease to Kinnexu a number of spaces originally proposed for the city parking lot. Now that's in the most recent meeting, Stephen Sneddon put forward an amendment that would hope, you know, it's intended to possibly disperse those allotted spaces throughout the downtown, but, you know, we'll see. Nothing, you know, concrete has been proposed yet.
When do you go and make kind of public commentary about, if it's not finalized, where do you go to do that?
Well, you can always drop off a comment just at City Hall, or you can email the council people and the mayor. That's certainly one way to do it.
Because I know there's a lot of folks that have an opinion about that.
Yeah.
And it's good to get your opinion out there and get your feelings and your ideas out there. And it may be there's a solution that's even better than what we've heard so far.
Well, if you want a pro tip from me, I would say that the best thing that you can possibly do is to keep an eye on council agendas. And when this is on the agenda, you know, go to the council meeting and comment in person in front of the city council. You know, when there are a lot of people commenting on a particular issue, I can say from experience that I've seen the council reconsider things on the fly. So, you know, it's probably your best shot at having some influence. And even if it's not on the agenda, there's always a time for generalized public comment before a council meeting begins. And so you can do it that way, too.
There are avenues for citizen involvement, is what you're saying. And, Jim, what is your thinking about the parking situation? McKiernan from the Daily Bee.
I think that, you know, the first thing I would say is, you know, I might have hammered on Shelby for the bid, but I do respect the direction he's taken parking downtown. I really thought the free lots were a great move at showing that the city was willing to work with local businesses to try and improve their parking situation.
And but it has worked.
I think it did.
To this
point.
If they take away a bunch of those spots, though, that lot is full.
Yep.
Almost every day.
And I think the measure comes in June, July, and August as to how parking really works, because, you know, the Daily Bee offices are half a block from the main city lot, and Cameron's offices are fairly close as well. And so we see that traffic on a regular basis. But, you know, originally when the discussion was for 60 spaces in the downtown lot, I was going, oh my gosh, that's huge, because I don't know that the city lot could absorb that much of an impact. But I think the new plan by the council is probably going to be better at dispersing some of that impact. And I think, honestly, Kinnick-Sioux downtown could have some benefits. I'd like to see more retail downtown, and I think we all would. And the first floor of that building, from what I understand, is supposed to be retail.
Hmm.
But the parking lot, the main city lot, at some point, the city's going to have to invest and figure out a way to fund a multi-deck lot. There's no way that lot's ever going to sustain the growth in tourism that I think most businesses anticipate over time. Let's face it, a lot of people are learning about Sandpoint, myself included, and a lot of my friends and family are. They're coming here for the first time. They're going, oh my gosh, look at this place.
Mm-hmm. You know, I will say I've never really seen the city lot get full until the city instituted this new deal where you can park there for 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that happened is that Cochava moved in, and Cochava's employees are parking there. Cochava has its own parking as well, but I'm pretty sure there's some overflow.
Mm-hmm.
And so now the city lot is actually getting near full. It used to be that city lot was never quite full. You could only park there for 2 hours.
And then the Cochava building, I don't think they're even using the first floor yet. They're only using the second floor.
And Cochava's built for growth, so there's going to be more coming there. So on either side, the Kinnick-Sioux Health Services lot is actually where Thomason Sotheby's is, at the corner of 2nd and, Main, I guess, or Oak.
Right. The plan is to build 40 additional spaces there.
Right. So, but that will be a big new addition, and all these extra 60 parking spaces, if they come out of the city lot, is going to pose a burden there. But we do have other free parking along on the other side of Fifth Avenue. There's a couple of large lots there. And there's also some parking down by the Sand Creek as well.
Yep. Well, I did drive around three times and never found a spot. So
when was that?
I went and parked on the two-hour thing and got a ticket.
Oh, I got my first ticket recently too. That was
a few days ago.
Yeah, oh, and that's part of the new regime here is to actually enforce tickets, and they're now planning to boot scoff laws that aren't paying their past parking fines.
And I've seen the list of people that have outstanding parking fines. And
what was the biggest one, Cameron? Tell us.
Dollar-wise. I can't remember the number. I can't remember the number exactly, but there was some poor guy on there that had something like $4,000 in unpaid tickets, and it.
Come on. I my sympathy only goes so far.
Yeah.
He's not a poor guy. He's just decided to blow it off.
Well, yeah. Actually, yeah, you're probably right. It's just, man, right. I guess he thought he was going to skate by without ever having to deal with this.
If he just never puts his car in a position where it can get booted, he will still get
by. Or it could be a ticket from 1960 that, you know, he never paid.
Fine after fine. I can guarantee you he's got a ton of fines.
I'm sure it's a person that just decided to, you know, put up a middle finger against the system and just not pay his tickets. And, you know, chickens come home to roost eventually.
Well, this is an exciting conversation we're having with Jim McKiernan from the Bonner County Daily Bee and Cameron Rasmussen from the Sandpoint Reader, and of course my co-host Chris Bessler. We're looking back at some of the big stories, newsworthy stories from 2016, and we're also at the same time looking forward to 2017.
And this is 88.5 KRFY, the morning show. I'm going to throw out one I think you guys skipped over that I considered a big story in 2016, and that was this, the school district's proposed $55 million plant facility levy.
That was definitely a big one.
Which went down in flames, you could say, because it lost by a pretty substantial margin. 54-93 voted against it, 29-53 voted in favor. Was that a surprise to you guys? Now, this levy was going to finance reconstruction of the Sandpoint Middle School, a reconstruction of Washington School. It was going to do work on basically buildings across the district, and some of it's been put off for many years and is badly in need.
Right. Based on all the evidence that the district put forward, it sounded like it was badly needed capital improvements. But, you know, I'm sure they knew from the beginning that price tag was going to be a very hard sell to people. Just kind of reading the tea leaves before that vote went down, just the amount of negativity out there for that levy, and, you know, the organization of the people opposed to the levy didn't really bode well for its success at the polls, I thought.
Yeah, the opposition was definitely well organized.
Yeah,
very organized. The big thing there was, I don't know, and I've talked to some of the committee members, and I don't know that they allowed, it's that political tolerance again, did they allow enough of the tough question people, I don't want to say naysayers, but the people that were really questioning whether a $55 million levy was the right way to go, were they allowing enough of that input to make the case for, yeah, we really need this? And, you know, I'm a huge supporter of education. Education's opportunity. And I think in this case, the district just fell short in the committee in really thinking of what was the best plan. That $55 million levy, that's a Seattle-sized levy. That's not a Sandpoint-sized levy. And so there has to be some chunks of that. But I honestly believe that they feel, and from a staffing level, the staff, the central office, they do need to have these things happen. It's just a matter of timing and cost.
Well, yeah, and from the district's perspective, their argument was that the most financially prudent way to do this is to do it all in one chunk.
Yeah.
Otherwise, costs will go up over time. But there again, it just added up to such a huge number that people just balked at it. And, you know, the big question here is this going to blow back on the district for when it's time to pass the basic supplemental levy?
Which comes every 2 years and is coming again this spring.
Yeah.
And, of course, the supplemental levy, completely different thing. It goes to operations, not to plant facility improvements. And it is going to it's raising some concerns, I think, that this very critical thing, it's now accounting for about a third of the district's budget. If the supplemental levy fails to pass this spring, the district would be facing some severe cutbacks in programs and staff and everything.
Yeah. You know, some people throw out the state-level funding needs to come back. You know what? This is typical of many states in the country. It's not coming back. I think it's always going to be a local issue.
Do you think those that were opposed to the levy were opposed to it because of the extreme amount that it was, or are they kind of not really into a levy in general, maybe a smaller one, more affordable, but do they support public education?
I think it was both. I think the people that voted no were looking at this huge price tag, and they did a very good job of convincing elderly voters who may be living on retirement or Social Security that, hey, this is going to have a huge impact on you. But they also questioned whether enough due diligence was done in the process to decide whether it had to be all done at once. And I don't know that the district made a great case for that cost savings that they talked about in doing it all at once.
Well, I do know part of the fear of breaking it down to one school at a time is that some schools will have bigger constituencies that are in favor of it. You got to get the whole county to say, okay, we want to, even though we live in Clark Fork, we want to pay more taxes to help improve the Sandpoint Middle School.
Yeah.
And so that makes it a harder sell. When they had them all wrapped into one, everybody was going to see a benefit to their local school.
And even as proposed, there were people, you know, kind of throwing up their hands saying, what do we get out of this? I know that Lake Pondere High School, for instance, there were some folks over there that were kind of, you know, wondering, you know, our school really needs a lot of repairs. You know, where are we?
And that school was in the original proposal, but because they were looking for ways to bring the total price tag down, it was put off with the promise, well, you know, we'll take care of these other needs first, then we're not going to forget about you, we'll come back. But I know actually some of the teachers that were at that school, and they were opposed to the levy for that precise reason, which raises the question, how well is it? Is a by school proposals in the future, if they decide to go that way, going to work? So
is the, and the school districts come up with a new amount for a new levy that they might propose, and we'll have to see how that goes.
And they'll be working on that for at least another year.
So
but first up is that supplemental levy this spring, and it's a very important levy for the school district.
You did bring up one good point though, Chris, was I don't think the district did enough to sell their own employees. And when you hear teachers say, oh, I don't know if we really need that, then that was my red flag. I heard a teacher who's very well respected in the community. Yeah. And
I knew people that almost always vote in favor of education that opposed it as well. So
right.
So it was a tough one for a lot of folks. Okay, we got to turn on to another subject here before we run out of time. We got about another 5 minutes or so to what would you identify as another big story of the year for the locals?
Scotchman's Peak, I mean, we may not be able to talk about him for a long time, but I know Phil would be really mad at me if I didn't throw that in there.
And Phil Huff, the executive director of the
Sandy.
Friends of Scotchman's Peak.
I think it's a great pick. Yeah, just for how much of a long haul this has been, you know, 10 years of work to get
and
this even considered.
Our senator or our congressman took it to the floor of the Congress in Washington, D.C. It was read as a proposed bill.
So there's some optimism there.
Of course, then the Congress ended. It didn't get considered, but it's very likely it'll come back up again next year. Now, of course, this particular wilderness bill has a lot of broad-based support from people in the timber industry and from recreationists and environmentalists. But there are some folks that are raising a voice against it.
Yeah, and it seems like there is some fear of federalizing more land, and that comes from a sort of an anti-federal perspective that we're seeing more and more of in Idaho state politics right now. You know, people are state land is a huge issue for a faction of Idaho politicians that are, you know, growing in power from year to year. And so I think it's on principle that they oppose it in a lot of ways.
I'm going to throw out one that is a little bit of a kind of a same sort of genre there, and that is that we just got word a couple of weeks ago that the Kinnexu Land Trust is trying to acquire a 160-acre parcel.
To make a purchase.
Up Pine Street, right? Mm-hmm. And as a community forest, with developed trails and be used for educational classes and that sort of thing. So that's going to be an interesting thing in 2017. They need to raise some money. They've raised over half the money they need to affect the purchase already. They have it committed, at least. Mm-hmm. But they got a long ways to go, and it's going to take community support to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about North Idaho and all the things that make it special, we all know Scotchman's Peaks and the Kinnexu Land Trust, the work they're doing, help preserve that and keep us North Idaho. Mm-hmm. I just want to remind our listeners, this is 88.5 KRFY. It's the morning show with Chris and Susie, and we're here in the studio wrapping up a very lively discussion with Jim McKiernan from the Bonner County Daily Beat and Cameron Rasmussen from Sandpoint Reader.
I got two more.
Oh, okay. Boy. You better
quick
talk
one. Two quick ones. So the one thing I'd sure love to see in 2017 is the details of the City Beach Master Plan, because, you know, when you look at that place, and I love to sit down at City Beach, sometimes enjoying my favorite beverage at Trinity, but I think it's an underutilized facility, and I think there could be so much more done with it. Some people would argue that it's great in its current state, and it is. There's no place like it that I know of, but seeing what the direction is, and I'm understanding there's some funding mechanisms maybe from the stadium tax that may be able to make an impact on that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another big thing that happened this year, is the Memorial Field grandstands were torn down. They're mm-hmm. being rebuilt in 2017. We're going to see new grandstands at Memorial Field. That'll be a kind of a big story.
Do you know when that's going to be ready?
It's supposed to be ready in time for graduation in mm-hmm. June. Yeah.
So
yeah.
The festival will have their new grandstands
the
also
will have
and graduation.
New grandstands for, yeah. And then, of course, all next year,
football
and soccer yeah. and baseball, all the other uses that have happened down there. Going to benefit. Okay, that's one. Jim, you mentioned another one.
The other one I think that's going to be interesting in 2017 is how the new county commissioners deal with planning and zoning.
Yes.
Because
planning is a big issue, no doubt, coming right up.
You know, yeah. Property rights versus don't screw your neighbor kind of thing. I mean, there's that you want to be a good custodian of your property, and you have the right to do with whatever you want, but yet if you're an adjacent property owner, you're worried about your own property value. So I'm not sure that the commissioners in the past year have shown a lot of respect to outside opinion, and the Planning and Zoning Commission lost one of their key people this last year.
Their commission chair,
Steve
actually,
Temple.
He resigned.
Yeah. So I think that's going to, you know, with the different makeup of the county commissioners, I think that's going to.
So is your prediction that the new county commissioners will have an ear for the public's feelings and
I'm
input?
Not optimistic on that, but
we have two new
hope.
Guys coming in.
Yeah, Jeff
McDonald.
Connelly. I think Jeff Connelly and Dan McDonald,
right.
and I don't know if that's enough to change that thinking, but having more than one opinion, or when you have that much power in three individuals at the county level without a lot of input, it makes me nervous. Mm-hmm. That's just, and maybe we'll be surprised.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You never know.
Do you concur with those three things for 2017?
Absolutely. Land use is going to be absolutely a key item to watch. Now you have also an organization called Project 7B that's been making some news lately, and they're aiming to be a voice in this conversation. They just commissioned a study to gather opinion about focuses that should come to bear when land use is considered. And so, you know, I guess we'll see what kind of a role they play.
Yeah, and actually, you can, if you're interested in that, you can go to project7b.org, mm-hmm. and a copy of that study is there. It was commissioned by, I think, I'm not sure where they gathered the money, but it was funded through
a university grant.
A university grant, and I think the Utah State University is the group that did the I'm going to throw out one more here, even though we're getting close to time here. I'd say a big thing that popped up last winter and consumed the town was the debate over refugee settlement.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to have totally receded. There were actually the county commissioners in December had passed a resolution, I guess, opposing refugee settlement in Bonner County. And then the city came along, and they were considering basically a resolution saying, you know,
we welcome them.
Yeah. And that kicked off quite a firestorm.
The outcry was unbelievable. I've never seen the council chambers that packed before. And then it flared up again on a statewide level when Breitbart News made an alleged incident that took place in Twin Falls national news, and it kind of flared up more angst about refugees, you know, and that was a sexual assault case that the Twin Falls authorities said was totally misrepresented, but at the same time, it was just this huge uproar that took place because Breitbart sort of used this as their standard for anti-refugee for an anti-refugee agenda.
It'll be interesting to see with a new president whose big plank was, you know, stop immigration, or at least illegal immigration, how that plays out here locally as well.
Well, and a quick note, neither one of those votes mattered. I mean, if you really think about it, they were just posturing. They had no leverage at all. And honestly, there's enough other issues to focus on than whether we're going to get a bunch of refugees in North Idaho.
It was pure political
theater. Either city or county.
Either one of them. I mean, it's not going to make any difference.
Yeah.
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 So on the other hand, I have a prediction for 2017. Can I speak?
Oh, man.
No, what it is
peace on earth?
Kind of fluffy like that. Sorry, Chris. On January 21st at the Panada at 11 a.m., there'll be a gathering of 10 or more groups of people who care about our community, who care and want to do exactly what you're talking about, Jim McKiernan, start listening to each other. And this is not political. This is anyone is welcome to come on. It's not an anti-anything, has nothing to do with the general election at the national level. It has to do with how can we strengthen our community by knowing who we are and getting to know each other. So this is what I call, on the positive side, possibly a move towards strengthening our community through understanding who we are and spending time together. Mm-hmm. So that's at the Panada on January 21st at 11 a.m. And the whole community is welcome.
Excellent.
You know, a very wise man told me once that the farthest right and the farthest left political figures put their pants on the same way.
That's a good one. Yeah. I like that. And I also wanted to say that next week on the KRFY Tuesday edition of the morning show, we'll have Sandy Compton in to talk about Scotchman's Peaks and what happened in Washington and what the future holds and how it will transpire or how it will move forward in as a law for Scotchman's to become wilderness designated. So that will be next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Well.
And there's always more coming.
You betcha.
So, well, you guys, we have maybe a minute or two.
I got more, but these are kind of the fun ones. First of all, are the Seahawks.
Give us a fun one.
Seahawks going to make it to the Super Bowl again?
Wow.
You think so?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
Oh, they just lost their Tyler receiver, Lockett. Yeah. Tyron Lockett. Oh, that's a tough one.
They lost.
And they didn't look too sharp. Who'd they last play?
Oh, man, Chris, put me on the
spot. It was just last week.
Jeez, I know.
Did they win the Super Bowl one year?
Yeah, they did several years. Yeah, Susie. They should have won two.
That's right. They had
one was that 30-second thing or something. The Patriots stole that ball
from their guy.
Yeah. And then I'm also curious, you know, what's the lineup going to be at the festival this year?
Yeah.
So
you'll have to wait a bit.
I know.
Got to wait on that one. You never know until they release it.
It's still early bird special to buy tickets, so there you know.
If we're going to talk sports, come on, Gonzaga, are they going to be undefeated up to tournament time?
Are they undefeated now?
They're undefeated. First time in their history that they've entered their regular season play. I mean, their league play undefeated.
They look really strong.
They look really strong. Yeah. St. Mary's could knock them off, or maybe BYU. There are a couple potential hazards out there, but it looks like they were set up to run the table and go undefeated into the tournament, which would be...
I'd predict the Final Four.
That is exciting.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
I love Gonzaga.
Can you get me some of those tickets, please?
I don't get those tickets. What are you talking about?
Wait a minute.
I was shoveling my own
sidewalk. Cameron, predictions, one half minute. Something for the future, something to look forward to or to think about.
Predictions. Well, I'm, as was mentioned, really curious to see what the final Memorial Field grandstands end up looking like. As we move into the 2017 legislative session, there's going to be a number of things to watch there, and I'm actually working on something right now to kind of test the waters a little bit, asking around what people are thinking, let's see here. More than anything, I'm just curious to see how politics in general shape up following this year, which I think has been a transformative year for politics. So
transformative.
That's a nice way of putting it.
Not necessarily a good way.
Well,
unfortunately,
we'll see.
Well, just the huge gap that exists between the sides.
You know,
I'm about a prediction. Okay. I predict fender benders in April in downtown Sandpoint.
What's a
fender? Oh, I think so too.
Because they're going to change.
We're going to revert to two-way traffic on all downtown streets, and people are going to take a while to get accustomed.
I mean,
to that.
I find myself turning down the wrong way on Church once in a while.
Yeah. So it was you.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't hit anybody yet.
Years ago, I can't remember. Maybe probably back in the 80s, Oak was one way, and it took me a long time to realize I need to look both ways when I'm crossing Oak when they reverted it back to a two-way street.
That's what the big one for me is, that people aren't going to look both ways. I now look both ways on Church just to train myself ahead of time.
Yeah, everybody should be doing that. Look both ways, folks, when you're in downtown, when you're crossing Church or Cedar or any of the one-way streets.
Always look both ways, especially for bicyclists. Yeah. And bicyclists, wear your helmets. I got to get that one in. Okay, well, we're about done here, and we really want to thank our guests, Jim McKiernan from the Bonner County Daily Bee and Cameron Rasmussen from the Sandpoint Reader. This was really fun talking about what was and what it will be ahead of us. And this is 88.5 KRFY in the morning show. A couple things I want to just throw out. Like I said, next Tuesday, it will be Sandy Compton from Scotchman's Peak in to talk about that. And the big event in January for KRFY is an evening with Viggo Mortensen. He'll be presenting his movie that is he's up for a Golden Globe for Best Actor in a dramatic movie. And this movie's called Captain Fantastic. It's an evening with Viggo as he presents the movie and questions afterwards. That's January 13th and 14th, Friday and Saturday at the Panada Theater. Tickets are now on sale at Eichardt's Pub, Evans Brothers. You can call us here at KRFY 265-2992, or you can go to panada.org and get your tickets, because guess what? They're selling fast.
They're selling. It's probably going to be a sellout for both nights. So if you're interested and you're listening to this, you should secure your tickets.
And I just should say that this is a benefit for KRFY Community Radio and Team Autism 24/7, two worthy organizations to support and have fun with Viggo.
That's right. And that's a great thing that Viggo is in doing this for the community. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, we have just about 24 seconds before the top of the hour. Anything else you want to say in 24 seconds? 22, 21?
Have a great 2017, folks.
We hope you have a wonderful day. And let's see what else.
Be safe.
Next week, tune in tomorrow for the KRFY Thursday show with Jack Peterson. And we are over and out.